This is WBAA News. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. After West Lafayette's recycling drop-off center closed earlier this year, local officials struggled to find a way to meet demand from residents. The closure coincided with a nationwide upheaval as China stopped accepting materials from the United States. As WBAA's Taylor Haggerty reports in the first of a two-part series, recycling advocates say education is the first step toward a better future for the industry in Indiana.
China's decision not to accept recyclables has had far-reaching effects, with major recycling centers closing or halting operation in multiple states. Despite being a landlocked state that didn't do much work with China, Indiana has also felt the impact. China's decision has created a glut in the market, so even if facilities process materials, they may not have any buyers.
No commodity put in the recycling bin was untouched by that oversupply that then caused the value of those materials to plummet.
That's Indiana Recycling Coalition Executive Director Allison Mitchell. Mitchell says the recycling sent to material recovery facilities, businesses responsible for sorting and selling product, are often contaminated and can't be processed.
As a country, and probably as a global society, we got pretty lazy about enforcing, you know, what to put in the bin and even more importantly, what not to put in the bin.
And in Indiana, that lack of recycling education is hurting the entire industry. Tippecanoe County's recycling program will cost the county $70,000 next year, according to County Commissioner Tom Murtaugh, in part because the materials being processed and sold aren't worth enough to cover operation costs.
Hopefully going to receive a little bit of revenue back, but it will no way offset the cost of actually running the recycle program.
Following the West Lafayette closure, residents not enrolled in city curbside pickup plans must go to a site on Lafayette's north side if they want to recycle or travel to satellite pickup stations. And Murtaugh says they have.
When we compare numbers, there hasn't been a drop-off in the amount that they're seeing. So we're very excited about the fact that people have not stopped recycling.
Even so, the shift has caused some problems. The satellite locations have a high contamination rate, with some residents dumping items like plastic sheds or construction debris. The county passed an ordinance fining anyone dumping unsanctioned materials at the drop-off centers. But County Recycling Coordinator Amy Kristen Presson says it may not be clear what's allowable.
It's a learning curve on figuring out what's the right way to recycle. We can't just throw everything in the bin and hope that somebody figures it out. We have to figure it out from here.
Kristen Presson says residents tend to make assumptions, often relying on the numbers printed on plastics. She says officials could make it clearer still.
So saying bottles and jugs, that really limits what people are going to think about. They're not going to try to put a plastic toy in there. That's not a bottle or a jug.
Those guidelines will be communicated through signs and labels at the drop-off centers. But while signs are in place at the rural sites, they haven't been constructed at the North 9th Street facility.
So I'm already seeing some like black trash bags full of stuff, which you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to just throw it in there loose.
Inside the warehouse, a mountain of mixed recycling brought in from the curbside program sits in a pile, waiting to be compacted and transported to a materials recovery facility rather than sorted on site. The on-site bins are confusing too, most of them not labeled. According to the Recycling Partnership's Senior Director of Strategy and Research, Scott Mao, officials need to directly engage with residents to eliminate contamination, and the decision to start recycling has to be community-wide.
Everybody has to decide at that community level whether they want to do curbside recycling, whether they want to, you know, take on the costs of that program, and then how to do it.
Mao says the financial burden isn't a reason to stop recycling. He says communities need to see it as a public service, just like trash collection.
Garbage doesn't pay for itself either. You know, when you put garbage into a garbage truck and take it to a landfill, nobody's paying you to put the garbage there. You get charged to put that garbage into the landfill or incinerator.
And Indiana Recycling Coalition's Allison Mitchell says if Indiana can come to view recycling as an opportunity instead of a financial burden, it can bring investment and growth into the state.
When we have a robust recycling program on par with other states, we can compete from a broader quality of life standpoint.
The Indiana Department of Environmental Management has approved a study to analyze the industry's strengths and weaknesses.
recycling has become a financial burden for many municipalities, requiring subsidies and support from taxpayers. The programs often rely on a few major players rather than a competitive market. As WBAA's Taylor Haggerty reports, industry leaders are searching for ways to make it economically sustainable in a changing landscape.
Yeah, this is industrial commingle. See, it's got plastic trays. There's some.
A fire tore through Frankfurt's Werner & Son recycling plant earlier this year. The disaster has had long-lasting effects. Since July, the city's street department has handled local residential recycling, collecting materials on a monthly basis instead of weekly. And nearby towns, including Delphi and Flora, that also relied on Werner, have suspended their curbside pickup. Company president Troy Werner says he's not sure where else they'd go.
I called my customers. The first thing they asked is, do you have a competitor that you could recommend? And I said, I'm sorry, I don't. They're to do what we do and provide the same service that we do. No.
Werner is rebuilding his business, but says it will be some time before they can handle the amount of product they were taking in before. And even when it's at full scale, the profits will still be small.
How much would you get for something like this?
This, penny and a half a pound,
okay.
Which is awful.
There's another barrier, equipment costs. Werner says the machinery they need is often made to order. The new facility has just one baler right now to bundle up products like plastic and cardboard. He says they bought it used for roughly $150,000.
If you were to start from scratch right now, starting no bill, no expenses, no income, and decide you want to get it in the recycle business, it wouldn't take you very long to figure out, I can't spend $4 million and sort stuff that's worth $30 a ton.
We're careful not to say the word waste. Yeah. In some regards, because it's only waste if we perceive it to be waste.
Purdue University professors Abigail Engelberth and John Sutherland say there are a number of hurdles in the way to reaching economic sustainability in the recycling industry.
Transportation, yeah. Logistics, cleanliness, lack of sorting, and then things get put in that gum up the systems.
Engelberth says some of the expenses can be eliminated if residents are willing to do a little extra work at home.
One of the high costs is because nothing is sorted,
yeah.
Right? So now we're paying to have it sorted.
The
resident could easily do that type of thing.
Sutherland says mixing materials results in more contamination, either from single-stream collection or because manufacturers are making items that involve multiple materials, like a plastic bottle with a sticky paper label.
It's easy if you have a pure material to recycle, but we don't often make things of pure materials, and then we get them contaminated.
And he says the low return on investments comes in part from a lack of demand. Things made from recycled products can be seen as lower quality, so not every manufacturer is interested in recycled material.
But unless there is a demand for products with recycled content, there's never then the demand to create that pull.
Engelberth says a shift could come from societal pressure for longer-lasting or recyclable goods.
Pressure manufacturers. That would be easier. Yeah. And that's where the change is going to happen.
And some Indiana manufacturers are already taking steps in that direction. Cummins remanufactures engines up to 7 times rather than build new ones. And Subaru plants, including Lafayette's, are implementing a zero landfills policy. University of South Carolina professor Mark Ferguson studies closed-loop supply chains, which prioritize remanufacturing and reuse of materials. He says it can be difficult to convince companies to change their production methods.
If there was a kind of incentive, either through legislation or consumer advocacy groups or something like that, you could see fundamental changes within a year or so.
Without that kind of incentive in place, however, the change can come with a higher price tag.
We call it a moral hazard problem, right? Because I might have to spend a small amount of extra money to make my product more recyclable, but I don't get any of the benefits.
But he says even if creating recyclable materials is more expensive, opting to remanufacture items with used parts can save companies money overall.
In general, it's a fraction of the cost of producing new.
And now may be a good time to change production pathways. Cities are looking to save money and keep their programs afloat. That could mean asking customers to change behaviors at home. If that happens, Indiana's manufacturing heavy economy could reuse those cheaper, more sustainable materials. For WBAA News, I'm Taylor Haggerty.